One, two, one, two.
I know how you guys are. So, see, for those of you who know Rob Sherwood, I guess I don't need to introduce very much, but the rest of you may not know who he is, which would be interesting because Rob is really recognized as being one of the real authorities on radio receivers, if not the authority. His testing in his laboratory, as you'll show at engineering, did for the Drake receivers what the rest of the receivers are now trying to do today. 30 years later. they talk about roofing filters. Well, he was talking about them in 73. So, anyway, without further ado, I'll give you Rob Sherwood, NC0B.
Okay. And with the size of the group, do I ask questions? I don't have that luxury like if I'm at Dayton or something, you got 200 people and you got a time slot that's like, they cut you off right at the last second. So feel free, as long as we don't get too carried away on that. And it was sort of funny, my first talk like I did here 5 years ago, I didn't decide to start testing radios, just like, well, I think I want to test radios. But I bought a radio, the league said it was great. I used it in a CW contest. It fell apart. I thought, okay, well, the radio is the radio. Must be the testing's no good. So that's how it started in, 1976. Here we are today. So what's important in a contest or DX pileup environment? Well, we need good dynamic range, and I'll explain what that is. And that basically means we want to copy the weak signals when the band's full of strong signals. And you need a better receiver for CW versus sideband by about 10 dB, and I'll explain that. And one thing is that we talk about at Contest University is, we really need to be a good neighbor, contest ethics, and we don't want to have a dirty wide signal. It's one way to clear a space, but that's not really what we want to do. And receivers have gotten better, but really transmitters have, if you compare it to a Collins S-line, transmitters have gotten worse for the most part, which is kind of sad. So what's most important? Well, there's all sorts of things, but if you say, what's the one thing if we're a contest operator, particularly on CW, it's the dynamic range. We'll abbreviate it DR3, meaning it's third order dynamic range. And we need to know the noise floor to calculate that number. Most of the time, the noise floor is not an issue, and we'll see why that is. So what's a noise floor? Well, we're probably all familiar with sensitivity. I mean, if you read QST in the 50s or the 60s, everything measured sensitivity, a half a microvolt or something like that. So that was always a phone bandwidth, single sideband bandwidth when that came along. And it was a 10 dB signal plus noise to noise ratio. What that means is you set a signal generator, you tune the signal in, even though it's a sideband bandwidth, it's a carrier. You tune away, you tune it in, that difference is read on a RMS voltmeter is 10 dB. So I'm going to play a little audio clip here so you'll see what it sounds like as far as signal to noise of what a sensitivity measurement is. So you can hear the noise, the hiss, and the tone. Now, in comparison, when we talk about noise floor, which will shut up here in a minute, noise floor as defined by the league is a 3 dB signal plus noise to noise ratio. And that means you tune the signal in, you have the signal and the noise, and the voltmeter goes up 3 dB, which means the signal equals the noise. So that's what that means. Well, in this case, since mostly we're talking about a 500 hertz bandwidth, a CW filter for noise floor, although you can do it for any bandwidth, but we're mostly talking about 500 if you look at QSD, here's what it sounds like. Because it's less signal to noise, but the bandwidth is less, it doesn't really sound that much different. A little weaker, but the noise is narrower too. And sometimes they call that MDS, minimum discernible signal, but you can hear below that. Okay, so that's what we're hearing in the lab. Now, noise floor is rarely an issue on HF, on 20 meters and below. Atmospheric noise, galactic noise, man-made noise, of course, if we're in the city, man-made noise really predominates. So. Okay, so what's really needed? People will call me up and say, I want a more sensitive receiver. Well, that's not really what they generally need. They need a better antenna. But so I've got a place out in the country. Maybe a few of you happen to drive by on Highway 14 if you're headed east to Fort Collins. And so I've got a five-element 15-meter Yagi at 70 feet. It's fed with 7/8 hard line. And I'm was adjusting it, tuning it to the quietest part in the band to see, okay, what's the noise out there? Just the noise that has galactic noise, whatever's bouncing around. And I happened to measure this one back here in 2010. And the transceiver I was using, which happened to be in a 781, ICOM 781, it's just got a sensitivity of a half microvolt, nothing particularly unusual. That's with the preamp off. And with the preamp on, it was 2/10 of a microvolt, nothing bizarre. And on in CW with a 500 hertz filter, it had a minus 135 dBm noise floor. So numbers that are just what you'd expect out of basically any radio. So there's my 15-meter tower and the five-element beam. And you can see that's looking towards Europe, and there's not a lot out there to bother me. So you say, well, that's nice. I don't have a signal generator. I really want to know, is my receiver a limit? Do I have a good enough antenna? So what can you do if you just say, I want to make some sort of a test? Now, all you need is some sort of a meter that's got a dB scale, VTVM from the 40s or 50s, any kind of a meter. It's got a dB scale. Hook it up to your speaker, and so you can, read the volume level. So what you want to do is say, what happens when I connect the antenna? Now, to do it right, you should terminate your receiver or your transceiver, but it really doesn't matter. But let's say you screw your dummy load on and you turn the volume up and you set the meter so it reads minus 10, just to some convenient level. And then you're going to disconnect the dummy load, connect the antenna, and see how much the noise goes up. And you want to do that without the preamp and with the preamp. And if you've got two preamps, like some radios, you can measure them that way too. So here's what I measured, 15 meters with that five-element Yagi pointed where there actually was no skip. And without the preamp, the noise, when I screwed the antenna on, went up just a hair over 3 dB. Now, what's the significance of 3 dB? If the noise goes up 3 dB, that means it's equal to the noise of the receiver. So you don't want the receiver to be contributing equal amount of noise as what's coming in on the antenna. So 3 dB is not enough, but then, of course, that was with the preamp off. So you turn the preamp on. In this case, it went up 8. Well, what would you consider sort of the minimum you'd want? You'd want it to go up 6 dB, let's say. We know 3 is not enough because that means receiver noise equals the outside noise. But remember, I did this test by pointing the antenna where it was quietest, and that really meant there was no skip. The skip was coming in from like South America toward the southeast. This is pointed to the northeast. So it's also interesting that you say, okay, you make this measurement, but then spin your antenna around if you've got a beam. Of course, if you've got a G5RV, you can't do that. But you can see 10 dB difference in the noise level depending on, what's skipping in and where there's no skip at all. So if you really have, in this case, the preamp off, 3 dB, you say, well, that's not good enough. But then if I pointed it towards the Caribbean, well, the noise came up a lot. Well, in that case, there's no need for the preamp at all, even on 15 meters. So keep that in mind, that often you don't even need the preamp. So I said, okay, somebody asked me, I did this presentation a while ago, and he said, well, like a year and a half ago, and he said, well, what's it like on 10? Because 10's starting to come back. I guess there was some DX this weekend I missed. And so I did it on 10 and 15. I've got a five-element Yagi on 10 at 65 feet. That's on a separate tower. And the 15-meter at 70 feet. And this was with a Pro 3, more modern rig, of course. And without the preamp on 15, it was a 4 dB difference and 3 dB on 10. And with the preamp, you can see it went up more than 10 dB. And preamp 2 was kind of a waste of time. I mean, the preamp 2, I've never seen preamp 2 on the Pro 3 be of any use. If you're going up approximately 10 dB, the receiver is not an issue at all. But it's there.
Question.
Yeah.
AGC off in all these?
Oh, no, AGC is on.
And you're measuring audio?
Measuring audio, right.
The AGC is not working.
No, I mean, with a typical radio today, if the preamp's off, the AGC threshold is probably 2 or 3 microvolts.
Yeah, so you're not seeing it.
So, yeah, no S-meter reading at all. Now, if I was in Denver, maybe I'd be seeing S-meter reading because, oh, they're racket. But no, this is just below the threshold of the AGC. So plan ahead if you can, if you've got options, which like my home in Denver, I put a tower up in 1972 It's right beside my house. My lot's 62 feet wide, 120 feet deep. Were there a lot of options where to place my tower? No, there weren't. Lucky to have a tower in Denver now. But there are noises that we find from our electronics in our home. We happen to still have some nice Sony CRT TVs that haven't died yet, and they make birdies every 16 kilohertz. If you've got a plasma TV, that makes racket. The router for the broadband, it makes birdies. I've got dish, a wireless internet. I've got dish network, all this stuff, switching power supplies. Everything's got a brick denote, and now they're switching power supplies. So all sorts of things make racket. The worst thing I ever had, which we got rid of when we moved, was that one of those touch lamps. You touch it, and it gets brighter, brighter. Ah, talk about fill the band full of noise. So I've got towers from right near the bedroom to 350 feet away, and it's amazing how much difference there is. So there's my QTH. And the tower clear here on the right, that's near the bedroom. That picks up a lot of racket. The one over here, just the left of the garage, that picks up a lot of racket. So if I point the east beam east, it's not too bad. And this west beam by the garage west is not too bad. But when they're pointing to the house, it's noisy. So this one right in the middle, that's 350 feet away. That has the 10 meter and the 17 meter monobander. And then the other three towers are 200 feet away, 40 meter, 20 meter, 15 meter. 200 feet seems to be great. Now, I agree, most of us aren't going to have that option, but if you've got the option, maybe you've got 200 feet to your neighbor, 100 feet to your neighbor. You have to figure out your property line, of course, but stay away, far away from the houses if you can.
Can I have a copy of that picture to show my wife?
Rob's wife chose those towers.
Well, my wife did say, if you're going to buy the place, do it now. So I was lucky.
What was the neighborhood now?
Well,
we moved in.
Now, you say, okay, so we're talking to me. Everybody wants to know, what's the noise floor of the receiver? In effect, what's kind of the sensitivity on sideband, the noise floor in CW? Well, you know, there isn't a lot of difference. And as we see there, the sensitivity is adequate. But you see, there's the top sort of 10 receivers, transceivers, they're pretty much around that 135, some a little more, some a little less. The Flex 3000 is an oddball. The original design of the 3000 was terrible. It overloaded on second order intermod terribly, and the preamp had way too much gain, and they reconfigured it. It actually has a rising gain pattern. So the 3000 is a little too sensitive, but it's sort of an oddball. And I put the Drake down there, the one that I sort of worked on back there in 1976, just as a comparison. You know, that's a radio that came out in mid-70s, and of course the R4B before that, and the R4 in the 60s, minus 138. Well, that's exactly the same as the K3. So nothing's changed there, as it shouldn't have been. There's sensitivity is not the problem, unless you're using a beverage or something, and then you have a special preamp. Now this is numbers with the preamp on. The Perseus there is just there because it does show up in my chart. It doesn't have a preamp, really. And the people that are like K3LR has 8 of them. And he does use a preamp for skimmer on 10 and 15, because that's 125 is a little not quite adequate for 10 meters and 15 meters. So what's dynamic range? As I said earlier, we want to receive the weak signals with all the band full of strong signals. How can we do that at the same time? Close in dynamic range. I really started talking about that in 76. Because the Drake tested, QST tested 20 kilohertz spacing, which is all they did for 25 years. And they said it was wonderful, and you got in a contest and it fell apart. So I said, well, you got to come up with a test that approximates what happens in a contest. So I tested it at 2 kilohertz, so we call that close in. You could do it 1, 2, whatever. The league started at 20, then it went to 10 and then 5, but eventually came along to 2. So, but it's more important for CW ops, less important, not unimportant, but less important for sideband, and that's a transmitter issue. So when we're measuring third-order dynamic range, we feed two signals in, we adjust the levels so that the distortion product generated in the receiver equals the noise floor, as we measured before. That 3 dB peak, you tune it in. Well, we don't have to go hunting for it. We know exactly where the third-order product is. So if the two signals are 2 kc's apart, the intermod product's 2 kc's higher than the high-frequency signal, 2 kc's lower than the low-frequency signal. If it's 20 kc's, it's the same thing, 20 kc higher, 20 kc lower. So we have to, we know where it is, and we also have to be sure we're listening to that product, that distortion product. So there's other birdies in radios. So you have to wobble the signal generators, both of them, to be sure that we're really listening to the right thing. So we make that measurement. So here's where it came along, the idea that when for 25 years, all the league did was do wide-spaced. And that was fine for an S75S33 or a Helicrafters or who knows what. But now, once those up-conversion radios came along about 30 years ago now, they had a crystal filter there in the first IF. And the first IF was at a high frequency, certainly above 10 meters, probably above 6 meters, something between 60, 70 megahertz. So the problem was, for all those years of testing, those two signals used for the wide test were 20 kilohertz away from the product we're trying to measure and 40 kilohertz away. Well, they didn't get through the filter. So all that test did was measure the front end, the first mixer, or if it had a preamp, but usually you could turn it off. So maybe it measured one thing, the mixer. But of course, in the contest, that 15 kcs was full of signals, so that wasn't a good test. So if you squeeze the signals in closer together, well, you're still tuning in the product, the little red thing there, you're tuning in the distortion product, but both signals got through the filter. So all of a sudden now we're going clear through the radio, 30 more dB a gain, 40, 50 dB more a gain. The intermod, the dynamic range would typically be about 20 to 30 dB worse because we're really testing the whole radio. So I was pushing this for, well, from 1977 clear till the league finally changed about 25 years later. And that Drake that I modified was on top for all that time just because I put a roofing filter in, although no one called it that. So for the highest performance, at least at the lowest cost, like with the K3, if you have a filter right after the first mixer for sideband, great. You have one for CW, great. And then all that stuff downstream doesn't have to work very hard. Even like a TR4, that was a fairly simple radio. It had a filter at 9 megahertz right after the first mixer. It had an RF amplifier, first mixer, filter, where it didn't have that issue of like all that gain in a wide filter at first and then finally narrow down. So this is what the K3 has, and of course the Orion and the radios that changed back to kind of an older design. So what's changed in the last 8 years? Well, the Orion came out in 2003, and they got rid of the up-conversion radio, like the 1000MP or anything like that, and went back to kind of a single-conversion radio, but then, of course, it went to DSP, but that basically most of the selectivity had already come along. Well, the half of it anyway. So then Elecraft came along, and now Yaesu with the FTDX 5000 and Kenwood with the radio you guys own here in the club, the 590S. So really the only company out there left, except the Flex, which is a totally different architecture, is ICOM. They're still staying totally with up conversion. So the 590 has been a big seller for the money, $1,700. That's a lot of radio for $1,700. I don't know. Maybe, if you look, Adam Farson, VA7OJ, he says, well, you have a hole. You can't receive like plus or minus a few kilohertz of wherever the first IF is. And they sell them to embassies or commercial or who knows, military, I don't know. So it doesn't really have 100% general coverage, but, I'm willing to give up 3 kilohertz. But it also may just be a mindset. I think every company tends to get in a mindset, and it's kind of hard to change gears. But it'll be interesting to see because, Elecraft has obviously done extremely well. Now Kenwood's doing well at a very economical price. The Yaesu 5000 is quite expensive, but and then the question will be, what's Kenwood going to do next? And at Dayton, they said, well, come out with a more expensive radio, $4,000 or $5,000, who knows, next year. So it'll be interesting to see what shows up at Dayton next year.
Have they improved the filters at 70 megahertz so that you can get them narrow?
No, there's no way to do that. And interesting, Steve London, N2IC, some of you guys probably know him, used to live in Denver area. He found that the 590, which of course is a down conversion radio for most of the bands except work bands, 10 meters, 12 meters, and 6 meters, he found it isn't overloading, but it has an issue with it. The first IF's wide when it's in up conversion mode, but it's isn't really overloading from the standpoint of, quote, dynamic range. But then the second IF is 2.7, and he's working CW. So a signal a KC away or so is capturing the hardware AGC that's protecting the DSP, the A to D converter. And so the guy's sending code that's a KC away that might be 10 over 9, not even 40 over 9, 10 over 9. It's modulating the gain of the radio. All they had to have done was provided one more slot for one more filter that could have been an accessory, because they have a filter that comes out of the TS-480 that you guys used to have at Jim's place. And that filter plops right in the, if it could have plopped right in the 590, it would have solved the standpoint of the AGC reacting, because it would have got rid of that signal a KC away or two KCs away. So that's been an issue that was kind of an oops, if you ask me. So, but no, as far as rate, I mean, filters at 60, 70 megahertz, it's really fractional bandwidth problem. You can't get super narrow, because fractionally it'd be like trying to make a 20 hertz filter at low IF. And the loss would be high, it'd be too expensive. So it's just a physics problem. So you say, well, okay, I read in QSD, I see radios, everybody wants to say they have 100 dB dynamic range. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, or whatever they have. So when's it going to be a problem? I'm just a normal operator, I don't have a lab. I want to know, when's my radio maybe going to fold up? So here's a chart. We're assuming that S9 is 50 microvolts, like Collins defined decades ago. And we're going to use a CW filter. We're going to have the preamp off. If you're in a potential overload situation, keep the bloody preamp off. And it's got a normal noise floor. So if you look there at EFT-757, got a lousy 56 dB dynamic range. That means at S9, it's starting to fold up. Likewise, if you look at ICOM 7000, about 10 over 9, it's going to start to have an issue. You look at the Pro 3, Pro 2 or Pro 3 are virtually identical, about 20 over 9. Where now if you look at your Kenwood, well, it's like 30 over 9. That's getting pretty good. Or the Flex or the Orion, we're up there, 40 over 9, 45 over 9. So a radio that's, having problems at 10 over 9 or 15 over 9, that's crazy. So here's sort of a table of the top transceivers. We'll drop off the receivers there on my chart on my website. And the FTDX 5000, it eked out the top position. Flex is kind of a different thing. I know Tom has a Flex, but it's the older model. Is anybody else here running a Flex? And if so, in a contest? Contester? Yep. Happy with it? 160? And that's kind of acid test. I don't find many, and I tend to say, well, it's a issue of trying to run N1MM and keeping the focus, and I click something, I go on some other band. I think it's not a performance problem, but it's more of practical human interface, trying to run the contest and try to do everything on one computer screen. So you can see the Elecraft there, great numbers, the Orion, and then the 590, you can see the difference between like 160, 80, 40, 20, and 15, it's 88. But then you go in up conversion mode, it's kind of like most up conversion radios there in the mid 70s. But so far, the biggest thing has shown up is what N2IC came across is the AGC sort of getting pounded when it's 10 over 9. So that'll be its limitation. Could have been fixed for $100. Now I'm lucky people loan me radios, and sometimes for months at a time. And I used the 5000, the little Kenwood, and the Eagle in this past year's 160 contest. So that's the only CW contest I operate. They only go about 25 words a minute or so. If you go CQ Worldwide CW, they're going at 35 or 40 words a minute. I can't even figure out what they're doing. So those are the contests I run. Plus, I happen to be a 160 fan. And I would run two radios in a given contest, back and forth, about 50-50. And really, all three of those radios did very well. The one contest, I had the Kenwood 590 and the Tentec Eagle, and those are the ones I ran that weekend. I thought I'd run 50-50. By Saturday night, I was on the Kenwood only. Not because the Eagle didn't perform well, it did just fine, but the ergonomics was better. It was easier to adjust, and because I'm not good enough to sit there and call CQ on one frequency, I have to start at 1800 and an hour later I'm at 1860, and I start over at 1800, go to 1860. With the limited bandwidth of an 8160 antenna, I kind of keep retuning the linear and adjust the drive so the reflected power doesn't go over 250 watts and trip off the alpha. So it was just too much trouble with the Eagle. But that wouldn't be a normal problem, you know, 20 meters, but certainly on 160 it was. They all could go down to low bandwidths, 50 hertz for everything but the Eagle, which went down to 100. That was still fine. So where did the narrow filters come through? Normally I ran the contest with about 200 hertz. If I was running my ICOM, it was the 781, it's an analog rig, it has dual 250s, probably dual 250s is about 200. So I tended to run the contest at about 200, except I was working this CE1/K7CA. I worked him in all three contests, and I worked him with all those rigs on whichever of the weekend. It was ARRL, it was Stu Perry, or it was CQ. And they don't work split, of course, on 160 like they might on a D-Expedition. I had trouble telling if he was coming back to me. He was just being covered up. So I went down to 50 hertz when I could, or 100 hertz in the case of the Eagle. And I could, when I worked him, I knew I worked him because I could clear out the QRM. So that was where it really came through. Just for the average contact, I didn't need to go down that narrow, but it sure came in handy. So you wonder, I've never been on the DX side. Can you imagine, though, what it's like to have 1,000 people calling you? Take an ACE operator, sort that out. So one thing we need to know is, whatever the dynamic range of your radio is, that it has sort of, we'll call it a window of a dynamic range, but we can move that window around, not physically, but from the standpoint of gain. So you have attenuators in your radio, you have a preamp. They all shift the dynamic range in its position. They change the intercept point, but I don't get too excited about the intercept point because that's theoretical. But you don't want to have all sorts of gain that you don't need. So if you're on 160, 80 meters, there's no reason to ever turn your preamp on if you're using their transmit antenna. Yeah, I mean, if you have some special receiving antenna, that's a different story, a beverage or something. But reduce the gain. So if you're on sideband and the noise level is S6 or it's S9, start punching in the attenuator, because you're not helping to receive at all if you've got band noise reading upscale. And even if you're on CW with a 250 hertz, 500 hertz bandwidth, from the low bands, you punch on the 6 dB pad or the 12 dB pad. You're not going to lose anything, because sensitivity is not the issue down there. 15 meters, maybe so, but not 80 meters, even 40 meters. So now let's look at transmitters. And I'm starting to test transmitters in the last few years. Of course, you can use the two-tone test.